On Saturday, January 8th, 2011, Dr. Peter Rhee was called into work on his first day off in weeks to Tucson's University Medical Center Trauma Center, where 10 gunshot victims were being rushed after a man opened fire on a crowd of people at a local supermarket. One of the victims was Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords. It was a day the nation would never forget, but for Dr. Rhee, it was also just another day on the job saving lives. He's written about his work in a gripping memoir entitled Trauma Red, The Making of a Surgeon in War in America's Cities. It is published by Scribner, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Dr. Peter Rhee to the program. Thank you very much for being with us.
Pleasure's all mine.
It is a delight to have you on the program. At what point did you realize that you wanted to share your story of how you got to this point and the work that you do?
Well, it got to a point where people were asking me about my life and what I did, and it was becoming more evident that people didn't know what I do for a living. It's estimated that maybe even 250, 300 million people in the United States know what a brain surgeon is and what a heart surgeon is, but most people are confused about what a trauma surgeon is. I was at my dentist yesterday, and he said, what do you do again? So it's a little confusing, I think, and that was probably the main reason why I wanted to write the book.
Being a trauma surgeon, so what qualifies that as being trauma?
You know, I'm often confused as being an emergency medicine physician, and we do share a lot of commonalities, but my background is a general surgeon first, and then you do 1 to 2 extra years, and it typically takes 7 years of training overall, like a neurosurgeon does, in order to become a trauma surgeon. And as you know, trauma seems to be kind of evident. You get in a car accident, you fall from an accident when you're out somewhere, or you get trampled on by a horse, off your ATV, bicycles being hit by cars. Those are all trauma, but they don't always require the services of a trauma team, nor do they always require a trauma center. But it's the ones that we've identified that might need surgery for life-saving work. You might need to have something done because it's a time-sensitive issue. For those types of injuries, a trauma center has been developed, and there's a team of people waiting to serve the public at a moment's notice and to be available.
It's rare for you to see the same thing twice, I would assume, in the sense of even if you're talking about an ATV accident, that the way that injures the human body is going to be different in every case.
You're absolutely right. The permutations are just too numerous to count. It is, in some senses, a routine to have a non-routine day. We might be talking about treating a two-year-old that fell into a pool and has drowned, or will take somebody who's at home that's very, very elderly that is innocuous, minor little fall for you and me, but for them, when they hit their head in the bathroom, on the counter, or on the toilet, and they have a bleed into their brain and their anticoagulants, all the way to burn victims, to car accidents, to stabbings, shootings, assaults. All of those are the wide variety of patients that we get. And within each little category, it's just a different surprise every single time, every single day.
Give us a sense of what you learned in a war setting of what can happen to the human body and the
chance. Yeah, I mean, you see all sorts of stuff in civilian world, and the accidents are almost predictable in many ways. But you know, I was preparing myself for gunshot wounds mostly, because that's what you see in the wars. And I set up a trauma training center in Los Angeles, in a civilian trauma center where we would bring in military doctors and nurses and corpsmen and medics to come in and see what trauma is like before we send them out to the war. One of the things is that we were in relative peacetime for decades. So we had gotten complacent, and we were concentrating on how to maintain our force rather than being prepared for what happens during war. So when I went out to Afghanistan the first time, we all knew this, but it was becoming much evident that we needed to have trauma training. So I came back to Los Angeles to an L.A. County Trauma Center, which is one of the most busiest and well-respected centers, to train people in that. And, you know, we would have nurses who had been in the Navy for 25, 30 years but had never seen a gunshot wound, and we were going to send them out to the field. And I thought that was just a horrible disservice to our servicemen who really expect the best of care and deserve the best of care. So while we trained them in the civilian centers with these multiple gunshot wounds, it still just did not compare to what I did see in the wars itself. The first time you see these devastating bomb blasts ripping off 2-3 limbs and seeing these healthy American soldiers being hurt like this, it was quite devastating. And, of course, we saw plenty of gunshot wounds because half of the deaths were from gunshot wounds, but it was this bomb blast that we didn't see on a routine basis that was a little shocking.
How long do you, and I guess you'd really never know the answer to this question, but how long do you have to determine exactly what is going on? I mean, that determination has to come very quickly.
Seconds. When these things come in and you even have a mass casualty, you know, we'll set one of our physicians out as a triage physician, and that person, you know, has no more than a few seconds to decide the urgency, whether this person is going to die immediately, need to get something done very soon, or can wait. But that's the kind of training that we do, and that's what we practice all the time. You know, people that we think are going to be okay turn and need emergent immediate care. People who are immediate get relieved and no longer need time-sensitive treatment, so we have to constantly re-sort and re-triage patients all the time in our profession.
As I mentioned in the introduction, you write about that day in January 8th, 2011, 16 seconds of gunfire on that Saturday morning in January, and you write about this in the book, and you say that "I was there when it happened" was another one of those random twists of fate. How so?
Well, you know, I think that event getting so much of the attention of the country was probably the main aspect of it. Unfortunately, we do see those types of mass casualties in the trauma centers across the country all the time. And we're invisible to the public. So this becoming visible was great in some senses. It's a double-edged sword, obviously. It was, for me, from an internal perspective point of view, it was great that we were getting some attention and we could focus the American public on some of the society problems that we have. But I also felt a little remorse in that it was all because of a VIP. You know, we these kinds of things happen all the time, and everybody that we treat, in our opinion, are VIPs.
Where were you physically when you got the call that this happened and your services were needed?
So I was home. I live actually 17 miles away from the hospital. And I was going for a run, and, you know, we had set up a system where our trauma surgeons no longer carry pagers, but the technology has advanced so much that we're all carrying cell phones and smartphones. And I got a text, which is a notification heads up, that there were 10 gunshot wounds coming in. And, well, you know, without breaking stride, I was able to communicate with my staff and determine what was going on. And it was fortunate that it was Saturday, where we had so many doctors and surgeons here in the hospital already, but especially when we got notified there was a congresswoman, they asked for my presence, so I came in right away.
I mean, you write in the book that things like this weren't supposed to happen in Tucson, so I assume you were disabused of the notion well before this incident that tragedies like this can happen anywhere.
To that extent, you know, Tucson is such a safe city. When I've worked at the inner cities of most of the countries in the United States, you know, we do know of the violence that goes on and the you know, the gunfights that we have. But in Tucson, you know, especially where Congresswoman Giffords was doing her outing that day, you know, if you go there at 7 o'clock in the evening, it's shut down. It's a mall. The streets are exceedingly safe. It's not like we have homeless people around in that area, and there's a lot of gang violence or drugs going on. So in that sense, Tucson wasn't supposed to have these kinds of mass casualty shootings. But, you know, as we've seen since that time period, gunshot wounds are becoming more frequent in the everyday lives of the American public, and not just in a smaller sector.
With 10 gunshot victims coming in, is each case separate? I mean, obviously, each life is separate, but is each case separate, or does what has happened to victim number one inform how you will look at victim number two, which will inform victim number three? Does it? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, both. You do both. I mean, you hear about what's going on, and what may seem like a one-time occurrence, in some senses, is different for us because we're playing the game. You know, we know who won the soccer game last night, and that's one incident. But during that time period, as it evolves over hours, it's not immediate. And when they come in and we're triaging, and again, here in Tucson, a great day because we had so much ample resources and people. The smartphones had it so that the residents heard about it and they came in. We had about 50 physicians in the trauma bays within 1 hour very quickly without us having to put out a drill where we had to have a chain and tree of callers calling each other in. I mean, it just happened. Those are things that we weren't able to do in the past. But once they come in, there's also they come in one at a time. It's not like one vehicle brought in all 10 people. So you do have a little bit of time to try to figure out the priorities. And once I got in there, that was one of my jobs, is to make sure that the people are in the right places with the right teams. There will be certain situations when that team will ask me to take care of the patient because of my experience and expertise. For example, one of the persons had one of the scarier gunshot wounds, which comes out through the clavicle, and there's a very large blood vessel underneath there that can bleed right into the chest. So we were very concerned about that as one of the higher priority patients, even though that person didn't die immediately before our eyes. So it's that type of work that we do, and we're able to quickly treat and get them to the appropriate area, where it's in the intensive care unit or the operating room or even to a lesser place so that we can bring the next person in very quickly. But, you know, as you asked, yes, it's gunshot wound. You have an idea what's going on, but each individual case is just a potpourri of injuries that they can have, from just small flesh wounds to life-threatening bullet wounds.
You go through all of this in the morning hours, and a few hours later, you're in front of a media spotlight, and you are making a statement. You're still in scrubs. You come out, and you talk to people and tell them, make a very simple statement. And then the first question, of course, which would I guess is the obvious question, would be, is the congresswoman deceased? What is that like for you, of having this medical component and then suddenly being thrust into that spotlight?
Well, I've been in the media quite a number of times with my previous job, where there was a lot of curiosity and interest in, you know, why is the military going to a civilian hospital to get their battlefield training before they go to the battlefield? So I had gotten some accustomation to it, but to be honest with you, I didn't really understand the full impact of what was going to happen as a result of that first interview and the media attention that we were going to get afterwards. So for me, that was just an everyday type of event. You know, I was on call this weekend, and, you know, after taking care of an unfortunate person who eventually died, they called me a couple hours later to talk to the mom and dad, and it turns out that this person was a young 12-year-old. So, you know, breaking news, bad news, and good news is something that is part of our job. You know, we graduate from the residency knowing how to take care of the body, but eventually over time and through further training throughout your career, you learn how to take care of the person and their family.
You made the declaration rather, I mean, very early on in that first press statement, that the congresswoman was in critical condition, and you said, but at the current time, I'm very optimistic about recovery. That's a chance. I mean, you mentioned this in the war. You never know how a patient is going to react. Do you have to be very careful with your words?
To a degree, yeah. But, you know, to be honest with you, that's what patients want from you. They don't want just all spectrum of possibilities. They want you to prognosticate. And then actually in the early parts of our profession thousands of years ago, you got paid on your capability to prognosticate and give good advice. And, you know, I think that that's one of the things that we actually teach is that you can't just give the family members a full spectrum of every possibility that they can. You're not lawyers with disclaimers and, you know, paragraphs of disclaimers saying what can and can't happen. They want to know what's going on. They want to know from you what you're going to do and what they should do. You know, I think that's one of the big problems that we have in medicine is that, especially with the young trainees, they try to give the patients the full option. And to be honest with you, I just took my car in to be taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a mechanic. I don't know all the intricacies. I need a good advisor to tell me what's going on. And that's what they expect from surgeons and from doctors. They want you to tell them what's going on, to be informed, but you also got to make the decisions for the patients because they're not doctors that's gone through the training and they don't have experience with this. But from our job perspective, we absolutely know some people that are definitely going to survive and some people that are maybe on the fence and some people that definitely will die. And in my opinion, at that time, the congresswoman was not in any danger of dying.
The book is Trauma Red, The Making of a Surgeon in War in America's Cities. It is published by Scribner. Dr. Peter Rhee, thank you very much for sharing with us this morning. I greatly appreciate your time.
Well, thanks again for the opportunity.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book is Trauma Red. It is published by Scribner. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.